Early this morning, while most of us were still sleeping, our clocks fell back an hour, and we gained an hour at the end of daylight savings, that controversial American timekeeping practice that persists in this country, despite all complaints. To the considerable consternation of church staff everywhere, the time adjustment always happens on a Sunday morning. This year, daylight savings started on March 8th, which I remember especially vividly because it was the last in-person worship that we had in our sanctuary at U Wellesley Hills in 2020. By March 13th, we had closed our campus to the public. We said, through March 31st. That was our initial plan, to give the coronavirus outbreak a couple of weeks to resolve itself. Back then, that seemed a reasonable timeline to us. Our response seemed sufficiently measured and adequate. Now, here we are in November, and we have no plans to gather again in person prior to January 2021, and no definitive plans after that, not yet. Something I decided to do this fall in response to the continued closure of our church buildings is lead guided labyrinth walks every other Wednesday, departing from our church courtyard at 12:30 and heading just across the drive to Elm Park, where the town of Wellesley built an outdoor labyrinth in 2018, the year I arrived here as your minister. That first year, through the changing seasons, from my church office in Rice House, I watched the locals walk the labyrinth with their partners, relations, friends, children, and even pets. I saw it covered in leaves in fall, buried in snow in winter, sprouting greenest grass in spring. I found the very sight of it soothing. Lately, I noticed how much emptier it has become as people continue to keep their distance from communal spaces during this pandemic. That means it is empty enough for our friends and members to walk. For years, I have loved walking labyrinths. They always help me to slow myself and center down. I'm always interested to see what happens when you simply stay on the path that is set before you. Any labyrinth walk invites us to enter into a contemplative mode and adopt a more deliberative pace. Like many of you, I find the extended timelines the novel coronavirus ushered into our lives increasingly dispiriting. What I find so meaningful about the labyrinth is that it offers us sacred experience, sacred space, and sacred image all at once, intimately and immediately. Every traveler who follows the path is eventually brought to the center and then back out again. No traveler is ever lost on that winding path, but rather somewhere along the peculiar way that needs to be traveled. Labyrinths remind us of the curious virtue of circling. If nothing else, the circling can help return us to ourselves, particularly when the directions our lives take appear anything but linear. When reversals become routine, when we find ourselves in a state akin to suspended animation. For millennia now, labyrinths have helped us humans feel more connected to the ground beneath our feet. In a time when nearly everything around us feels up in the air, I know I need regular spiritual practices that prove grounding. The labyrinth is for me a profound symbol of the continual pilgrimage through life. Whenever I walk one, or for that matter, draw one in the soil or trace one with my finger on fabric, I feel better oriented, more intentional, less harried, better fitted for the journey ahead, however far long it might stretch. Circling the labyrinth in a liminal season such as this is a useful exercise, and I hope you can join me in it sometime this fall. Labyrinths have become widespread in America over the past couple of decades. They can be found in schools and hospitals, gardens and prisons, spas and cathedrals. Their rise in popularity can be traced back to the work of the Reverend Dr. Lauren Artress, an Episcopalian priest, spiritual director, psychotherapist and author who founded an organization called Veriditas, dedicated to helping people everywhere make good use of the labyrinth as a psycho-spiritual tool. Dr. Artres first encountered the labyrinth in Chartres Cathedral in France, where she had gone on a pilgrimage in the early 1990s. Impressed by its healing qualities, she decided to create one at the church she served in San Francisco. At the time, the AIDS epidemic was devastating the gay community there. In her book, Walking a Sacred Path, Rediscovering the Labyrinth as a Spiritual Tool, Dr. Artres recalls that one man living with AIDS told her the labyrinth gave him the experience of being mentally lost and spiritually found. Mentally lost and spiritually found, both at once. If we're ever feeling mentally lost, it's all the more imperative for us to feel spiritually found. All the great world religions contain teachings that articulate the journey of the spiritual seeker, the path one must walk in order to grow in compassion and respond to the world with clarity and wisdom, Dr. Artres writes. The labyrinth is an evocative tool. It works through the imagination and the senses, she explains, creating an awareness of how we relate to ourselves, to others, and to the holy. To reap the benefits of these insights demand that we be able to experience our experience in a conscious way. The labyrinths in medieval churches like Chartres were meant to provide people with the rare and precious experience of being pilgrims. In an era when the Crusades made travel from Europe to the sacred site of Jerusalem too dangerous for most, people could make symbolic pilgrimages in their local communities, together with one another, in a way that allowed them to stay relatively safe. As quaint as it might sound during this time of continued confinement, climate crisis, and civic strain, we can all be pilgrims today. According to Protestant theologian H. Richard Niebuhr, pilgrims are persons in motion, passing through territory that is not their own, seeking something we might call completion, or perhaps the word clarity will do as well, a goal to which only the Spirit's compass points the way. In the midst of a pandemic, even, or perhaps especially familiar places, can have the feel of terra incognita and be surrounded by an air of unreality. They are the same, but different, as many of us now might experience ourselves to be. We may well need a spiritual compass to navigate this. The first time I encountered a labyrinth, I had made an out-of-town trip to General Assembly, the national gathering we Unitarian Universalists hold each year. Somehow I had gotten lost in the massive, faraway, strange convention center with its endless hallways and auditoriums and duplicate conference rooms. There, I turned into one room looking for another program that was obviously being held somewhere else, and I would have left quickly except that I felt transfixed by what I saw. People moving at a gentle pace, winding their way in circles around one another. They were following the canvas path of an 11-circuit Chartres-style labyrinth that had been spread out in large panels over the carpet. The entire scene piqued my curiosity and inspired a bit of wonder. So maybe I wasn't lost after all. These people had clearly found something that I did not know I was looking for, a time-honored practice that was centering and grounding. When we cannot press on, perhaps it's time to look within. Whenever we're feeling disoriented, whether to place, time, or circumstance, we can take a moment to try, to at least try, to reorient ourselves. The labyrinth can serve as a primal homing device. Before labyrinths appeared inside early churches, They were put outside and probably used in the rituals of Earth-centered traditions. There is some speculation that the pagan peoples might have used them in funereal rites. The womb-like form of the labyrinth represent to our ancestors the truth that we arise from the earth and must eventually be returned to it. Our human journey from birth to death is always the same. When we enter a labyrinth, we embrace, we own our embodiment. We begin a walking meditation, we offer a whole body prayer, and our mind-spirit divide is mended within us, and our spiritual restlessness abates for a while. The labyrinth introduces us to the idea of a wide and gracious path. It redefines the journey to God from the vertical perspective that goes from earth up to heaven to a horizontal perspective in which we are all walking a path, Dr. Artress writes in her book. The vertical path has gotten mired down in perfectionist associations, whereas the horizontal path communicates that we are all in this together. During difficult times, the labyrinth encourages us to turn toward one another instead of on each other, no matter how twisted around everything might appear. What if we believed that something at the center was still holding every single one of us in our way? Whether we traverse an actual or metaphorical labyrinth, Dr. Artress suggests we ask ourselves these questions. Have I deepened my compassion for my family, my friends, and the strangers who cross my path? Have I lessened my judgments about my loved ones and those I meet? Have I increased my patience with my loved ones and those I meet on the path? If not, understand, you may have a ways to go yet. As one of my minister friends often tells me, none of us asked for a global pandemic. We weren't planning on it, and it's nothing we can manage neatly or efficiently, not even in our smallest corner of the woods. These days, we talk a lot about getting through this crisis, as if we knew the route, as if it were linear, as if we were clear about where we're headed. Truthfully, none of that is the case here. We thought we knew a lot in March, but we know better now. We have to be far less assuming. Sometimes I recall the motto of this congregation, whatever path brought you here, UU Wellesley Hills welcomes you. Whatever path brought you here probably was not a direct one. It likely wasn't the shortest distance between two points. My guess is that it was rather circuitous. Yet it was a purposeful path in the end, no matter how much it appeared to meander along the way. Each of you can balance contemplation and action, movement and stillness, venturing and stopping. You have muscle memory around it now. Pilgrims on the path acquire that, especially the longer they stay the course. Now that it's November and the last of our daylight savings has been spent, people are, of course, preoccupied about the upcoming election. They are eager for November 3rd to come and go. But this election day is unprecedented in our history. Things in our country may be upended for a little longer before they are settled definitively. And we all need to manage our expectations and pace ourselves accordingly. Each of our timelines must be considered tentative at best. Beyond the election stretches the 2020 holiday season, which the governor of Massachusetts just told us cannot happen as it usually does. Cannot happen as it usually does this time of year. As we stay put, we are traveling through time just the same. It's an awful lot to accept, yet we can remain good companions for one another for the duration however long it spans, and at whatever remove we do that. If we find ourselves walking in circles, kept away from our intended or intensely preferred destination, we have choices about the spirit we will bring to that path leading us onward. We can face fearsome realities all the while. This is not a journey that any of us are making alone, nor should we even attempt that. So, may traveling mercies be upon us all. My hope is that we can allow ourselves to fully experience our own experiences, however hard they seem, because wisdom always emerges from sharing those. Share yours with me, and I will share mine with you, and together, I promise, we will find our winding way somehow.